And of course, Shukadeva is going to do the chanting, and Maharaj Parikshit is going to do the hearing. So then, Vaidhi Bhakti, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, one who's in this position, who realizes I've got to get out of Maya, I'm in a bad situation, then they surrender to the spiritual master, and under his direction, they develop as devotees. So now we come to, we're almost at the end, just another few minutes. What is like the main practice? What is the essential activity which you should, or the essential point you should be trying to reach by all these rules and regulations? So, Prabhupada, there's a verse which, it's the last of these verses that I've given you. Smata Vyasatatam Vishnur. Prabhupada refers to it, bottom of page 23, going over to page 24. We should always try to mold our lives in such a way that we always remember Krishna. Somehow or other we should remember Krishna. Then right at the bottom, Prabhupada says, actually this is the most basic of all regulative principles. And then over the page, within this simple order and prohibition, all regulative principles are found complete. So this is, Prabhupada is actually translating and explaining this last verse of ours here. Smatavya satatam vishnur vismartavya najatachit sarvavidhi nishyadisyur etayor eva kinkara. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be the servants of these two principles. And again you'll note from Madhyalila chapter 22, which means it's being spoken directly by Lord Chaitanya himself. So this is the essence of all the rules which make up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. You always remember Krishna, you never forget him. And every other rule is just to help you do that. All your vegetarianism and so on. What is it for? Not so you become a nice, pious, gentle person who won't hurt the animals. That will come as a natural result. But you are being a vegetarian, or rather at least eating only prasad, in order to help you to remember Krishna and never forget him. Why no intoxication? Because intoxication bewilders your mind. And when your mind is bewildered, you can't remember Krishna nicely. And so on. All the rules. So if you achieve this rule, then you will automatically have achieved the others. That's one way of looking at it. If you come to the platform where you're totally fixed in Krishna consciousness, then automatically you'll follow all the other rules by spontaneous inclination. And all the other rules, if you haven't come to that platform, all the other rules, you should understand, they're just to help me to come to this point of being a pure devotee of Krishna and nothing else. The vidis, vidi means positive rules, and the nishedas. Nishedha means the prohibitions. So then there's a fairly lengthy explanation back to Nectar of Devotion, starting more or less towards the top of page 24 and going over to almost the bottom of page 26, all about Varnashram. So why such detailed discussion about all the different varnas and ashrams and what they should do and not do? Because when you talk about the rules and regulations of scripture, then the rules and regulations of varnashram, they're really like the most important. If you're not acting in varnashram, then you're not going to be able to follow the rules and regulate the other rules and regulations. Varnashram is like a framework for executing duties which can then be dedicated to Krishna. So therefore Varnashram is being described. The main rule is always remember Krishna. But then what's the next rule? Which is like a subsidiary rule? That you have to act in terms of Varnashram. Don't act independently. So we won't go into that in great length, but that is there. Then, the last paragraph, right at the end, Prabhupada is speaking, he's sort of speaking in the context which he was faced with, that we are not in Varnashram very much. We're certainly not so much in Varna, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. We are sort of, you know, sometimes we're preaching, that's Brahman. Sometimes we're cleaning the temple floor, that's Sudra. Sometimes we may be out collecting money. So, I mean, it could be taken as Vaishya. I mean, it's also Brahman too, collecting donations. But, or sometimes we're managing. You may be the head of your Sankirtan party. And you have to tell the devotees, come on, get it together. So this is a little bit Kshatriya perhaps. Anyway, the point is that we are not clearly this, that, or the other thing in terms of Varna. In terms of Ashram, of course, it's more clear, that's a fact. But it's certainly a fact that we are not rigidly following Varna Ashram. And it would be a little hard for us to give a clear definition. What am I in terms of my Varna? Perhaps. So therefore Prabhupada says that in this last paragraph, this is actually just himself offering his realization, and it's very, very important. He says, there's no need of designating yourself so much. Just do whatever you can do. Let everyone be engaged in whatever occupation he now has. Or in other words, just do whatever you can do and worship Krishna. Like that. Don't get too hung up about your position in Varnashram. Just be nicely situated so you can serve Krishna. And then he says that will adjust the whole situation. Everything will be very, very nice. So if you do like that, acting under the direction of the spiritual master and following scripture, if you regularly execute your duties for Krishna, then gradually you'll rise to the platform of Krishna Prema. So any comments or questions? All right. So we'll see you on Monday, I guess. And don't forget, learn your three verses and write the summary of chapter 3. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So first of all, I'll give back the some things which perhaps weren't really up to such a good standard. So this time also we've been on the liberal side, but just a little more strict. So some of you, you'll see there are a few comments on some of your papers, where it says, in a few cases we made the comment that what you did was excellent, so that means it was really very good. We weren't so sort of free with giving that type of compliment. So a few of you did it very, very nicely, so I gave you the comment of excellent. Others, very good means that it's quite reasonable. Good means that it's acceptable. Okay. Then I introduced another level, which is okay. That means maybe you scrape by if you're lucky. And sometimes I didn't even make that comment. That means that you really, you know, if you can, you should really try to improve a bit. Try and take it seriously. Okay. Actually, generally you all did quite nicely, and some of you did very well. So it is encouraging. But when you're trying to analyze these chapters, it's not really so hard. What you have to do, ideally, is first of all just read the whole chapter. Usually it'll be about 6 or 8 pages, or at the most 10. So that may take, I don't know, half an hour, 20 minutes or something like that. Not a terribly long period of time. So you read it through and just try and mentally note, or even make a few notes in writing, of what strike you as being the main points being made throughout the chapter. And then when you feel that you're reasonably clear on what is the basic flow of the ideas in the chapter, then you can write your summary. Rather than just grabbing the book and just turning to the first page of the chapter and just making a few notes, I mean, just write a bit, then the next page, like that. So, of course, we don't want you to spend all day on these things, but I would have thought that if you have maybe 45 minutes or an hour, then that would probably be quite sufficient to read it through once and get an idea of what is being discussed, and then to go through it again and write your summary. So here are the papers for the Muttajis. If someone, one of the ladies, could distribute those. And these are the papers for the men. Oh, and there's that also. Yeah. If someone, as a matter of interest, how many of you feel you are ready for writing out these three verses? Could you put your hands up if you feel you're more or less ready? 1.5, 2.5, a few, 4. Okay, so what we'll do is we won't write out those verses right now. We'll wait till later on, maybe around 11:30 or so, towards the end of our second session or thereabouts. And then what we'll do, we'll give you a half hour, 45 minutes. So if you happen to know them, you can just write them out and go. But if you feel you need to just revise a little, then you can spend 15 or 20 minutes, or even half an hour, say maximum half an hour, just going over the verses and trying to get them into your mind, and then write them out. Is that okay? All right. So now we have some couple more verses from this chapter we're going to be discussing today. So we can distribute those. These are for the ladies. If one lady would like to distribute those, and these for the men. If there are any extra, just pass them back to me, please. Any left over there, or any more needed? Does every, you don't have? Oh, okay. Anyway, if anyone needs another one, I have a few more here. And let us begin by telling you what your homework. Actually, let me begin by just asking you a practical question. Tomorrow, at some time around 8 or 9 or so, Partha Sarathi Prabhu is arriving, so I assume most or all of us will go down to meet him. So that would mean, you know, what with meeting him and bringing him back and having a welcoming ceremony for him. I think it'd be a little unlikely that we would be ready to meet here at 10. So we could meet at, say, 11 perhaps, and then just have one session till about 12 or a little before 12, then I actually have to go to the university and to leave at 12. Then the thing is that on Wednesday is the day before Gopanim, so Srila Kirti Prabhu said that we won't be able to have any session at all on Wednesday because you all apparently will have duties related to getting the festival together. And then on the festival day, Thursday, we won't have classes. And probably, and also on Friday we won't, because everyone will be recovering or whatever, cleaning up or doing whatever to something like that. So in fact, you know, possibly we can have a session tomorrow for an hour, that would be okay. Alternatively, we can just wait till Monday next week. Starting from next week, there won't be anything, as far as I'm aware, to interfere, so we'll just carry on 5 days a week. So I thought we could do this democratically and take a vote. Who would prefer to meet tomorrow at about 11 and have a session for 1 hour? Oh, it's overwhelming. So, who would prefer to not have a session tomorrow? I thought so. Who would rather sleep? Does anyone have an opinion? How to extract an opinion? Prodigy.
I'm sure most of them are neutral. If you have a class, then you will attend. If you
don't
have
a class, then you won't. I see. All right. Well, at least that's one opinion. I don't know if anyone else is bold enough to express another.
Not the classes, but the disciples.
Think about
not the classes.
Mm, right. So. Okay. So I think let's just say that, yeah, because I don't know, he may want to have a meeting after he gets back with his disciples, or he may be just tired and not want to. I mean, I don't know really. But I think let's just postpone it all till Monday next week. Okay? Let's stay in ignorance till then. Bhagavan? Well, Shruta said that, or Brihat at least told me, that he felt it wouldn't be a good day because the devotees will have to tidy up after the festival. But anyway, I can take it up with him again. And if it seems like the devotees won't need to be so involved in different activities on Friday morning, then we can just announce it and make everyone aware. Okay. All right. Oh, and last but not least, your homework. Oh, yes. So have you all written out the summaries of chapter 3? Very good. So you can hand those in. Can you turn this fan on a little? I mean, it doesn't have to be off, but not full speed. Okay, well, we'll just see how it goes, as long as it doesn't blow my papers off. Thank you. Some more assignments? Thank you. And seeing you've now got so much time, you've got a week. A week before we meet again. So, we'll set you a very nice, extra long assignment for this week you've got off. You can do the next, write a summary. Write summaries of the next two chapters. Devotional service surpasses all liberation and the purity of devotional service. Okay. Any more assignments or is that it? Did any of you, I haven't had a chance to look through them yet, but did any of you not write it? When are you going to? Are you going to? Yes. When will you give it to me? I see. So please do. Anyway, we want you all to become Bhakti Shastris. So we do need these assignments. It's all part of the requirements. So don't just think that a week is tons of time and you can do it later. Try and get these things done in good time. Okay. Now we are going to, maybe at the end of next week or thereabouts, we're going to have the first of our two major tests. This one, learning the verses, which we're going to do in an hour or so, that's just a minor test. So we're going to have one of the two major tests, probably at the end of next week. Something like that, when we get about halfway through, around chapter 9 or so. 9 or 10. So let me just tell you some of the things which you're going to need to know. We're trying to help you. So we're telling you all the questions and all the answers beforehand. Okay, so you will need to know the definition of pure devotional service. In other words, that Anya Bilashita Shunyam verse, which you're going to be tested on shortly. So that is a must. Then you'll need to know the definition of sadhana bhakti. You'll need to know the definition of vaidhi bhakti. And you'll need to know the six characteristics of pure devotional service from the first chapter. And then, of course, what we're going to study today, the different degrees of eligibility or different levels of devotees, you also need to know that. I would suggest try and learn these things in the meantime. Don't wait till the day before and then just decide you're going to try and cram it all into your mind. I don't think it'll really work so well. Okay. So any questions so far on anything? Yes, like that. Yeah. You'll have to know what are the six characteristics, which arise on which levels, those which are related or which arise on the level of sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, like that. And then give a brief description, like a couple of sentences, something like that. Just a very brief description of each one.
The definition of
Yeah. Yes. You'll need to know it in detail. Today we're only going to ask for the verse and the translation. But when it comes to that test, then you'd have to know the two parts and then the three parts of each of those two parts. Right? The three words, Krishna, Anushilanam, and Anukulyena, right? And like that. Okay. Some other questions on anything of what we've discussed so far? All right. So let us begin. So let us, I'll just go back over what we discussed on Friday. We were discussing about sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti. So who can please put their hand up first and tell us what this term sadhana bhakti means? Someone? Come on, you must know. Wait, yeah.
Devotional service executed by living within.
A literal translation means practicing. Practicing devotional service. Indicating you're in the learning stage. There's sadhana, which means practicing, and then bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, they're included within, under what heading? There's a heading which bhava bhakti and sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti are included under. Sorry? No, no, it's a Sanskrit term. It's very similar to the word sadhana. Sadhya. Yeah. So both bhava bhakti and prema bhakti are considered sadhya bhakti, which means perfect devotional service. Whereas sadhana means you're practicing. So, we then gave that verse which explains the definition of sadhana bhakti, that you're serving, but not on the basis of love. You're just practicing. And the idea of the practice is what? Who can tell us? What is the idea? Or what are we trying to achieve through that practice? Right, yes, that's the idea. We're trying to awaken our natural tendency to perform devotional service and ultimately to love Krishna. That is sadhana bhakti. We're not just learning to do something which is foreign to us, and eventually if we learn it well enough, then you know, we sort of drive it into our minds and then we know it. We're actually trying to draw something out which is already within us. So sadhana bhakti is divided into two stages, or two types, you could say. It's not really two stages, but there are two types. One is, in fact, on a higher level, actually. But strictly speaking, they're just two types. So what are those two types? Most of you got it right in your assignment, so you must know. Some of you, I must admit, didn't include it, but I just put that down to lack of time, and I hope not laziness in doing your assignment. So what are the two types, Bhakti Anthony, tell us?
Vaidhi Bhakti.
Okay. And Bhakti and Lily, please tell us, what does Vaidhi Bhakti mean?
Where there's no specific attachment.
Right. And then, so if you've got no spontaneous attraction to doing it, on what basis do you do it?
Under the guidance.
Yeah, on the basis of rules and regulations, which are received from two sources, basically, the spiritual master and scripture. And then Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, Bhakti in Charmaine, tell us what that is. So it's not necessarily like that. Basically the idea is that there are two types of devotional service in practice. Although having said that, and Prabhupada made the point, we discussed it on Friday, that it is a fact that Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti is actually on a higher level also, because there is a spontaneous attraction already which is lacking in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti then, in very simple terms, here we're talking in very simple terms, means that the natural attraction for devotional service, which is present within the heart of every living entity, it means that that is already aroused, but it's not mature, therefore you have to practice. Anyway, when we get to chapters 15 and 16, we'll go into it in detail. But that's like the basic idea in very simple terms. And then in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, because actually the main discussion here is then on Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and in fact what we're going to be discussing today and for the next few days will be about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti mainly. So in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti there is like a theme or an underlying principle which is meant to be the basic theme or principle of all the activities that you do in that Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And there's one verse we gave you in that regard. So what is that underlying theme or principle in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti? Deepak. Right. Very good. Smarta Vyas Satatam Vishnu. Always remember Krishna and never forget him. And as long as you do that, or we should say that all the other rules and regulations are just to help you do that. And if you're able to do that, then in effect you're fulfilling all the other rules and regulations. And then Prabhupada went on to discuss about Varnashram. Varnashram is an important vidhi, it's an important rule, following Varnashram. It'll help you. If you're trying to be Krishna conscious according to the Vaidhi process, if you follow Varnashram, then that'll help you. But as you advance, then you'll become more able to just render any service to Krishna without having to be so dependent on your position in Varnashram. So at the end of the chapter, Prabhupada said that just do whatever you can do. Whatever comes to you, you do that. And if you do that in Krishna consciousness, under the guidance of the spiritual master, then you'll advance and then you'll be successful in Krishna consciousness. So now we're going on to chapter 3, which is entitled Eligibility of the Candidate for Accepting Devotional Service. So now, the first point which is made in the first two paragraphs in this chapter on page 29 is that the main thing which makes a person eligible, because the subject is eligibility, who is qualified, who's eligible for devotional service. So the main thing which makes you eligible is association with devotees, and particularly with advanced devotees, even particularly with the spiritual master, actually. So we have given you some more verses. If you look at your new verse sheet, look at the first verse. This is actually a very important verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and we've given it to you with the translation as it appears in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as spoken by Lord Chaitanya himself. But if you look in the second paragraph on page 29 in your Nectar of Devotion, This verse is being quoted. In fact, it's a verse which appears initially in Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Krishna to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita. And if you look at the two translations, you'll see there are slight differences in a sort of technical sense, not in a real sense that they're actually saying something substantially different from each other. And in fact, the translation which Prabhupada has given in Nectar of Devotion is at least makes a little more clear what is the, like, one of the main messages we're meant to get from this verse. So let's just go through the verse. As it appears in Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada's translating that only by exceptional fortune, in the verse on your verse sheet it says somehow or other, that somehow or other and the exceptional good fortune from Nectar of Devotion, they're actually synonymous. That they're actually directly synonymous. So, somehow or other, or by exceptional good fortune, one becomes attracted to Krishna. So what is that somehow or other? What is that good fortune? That is association of devotees, actually. Then, in the Nectar of Devotion translation, Prabhupada goes on to say that you become attracted to Krishna on the basis of this good fortune, somehow getting this association. And then that service, when you take it up, it'll work. It'll work. You'll become purified and you'll make advancement. If you have two qualifications, and here as the verses appearing in Nectar of Devotion, it makes a little clearer what are the two qualifications. One is not completely detached from fruit of activities, and the other is not completely attached to devotional service. Just look on the verse sheet you've got in the word for word. In the word for word, I think it actually makes it even more clear. Look on the third line. Nirvina, not falsely detached, not overly detached. And na atisakta, not overly attached. So, what, just bearing in mind the verse Anyabhilashita Shunyam, which you all know, what does the nirvina, not being falsely or overly detached, what part of that Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse could we relate this nirvina word to? Sorry? Jnana more. It's more jnana. Yeah. So in that Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse, it's being said that you shouldn't be attached to this philosophical mental speculation, particularly impersonal types of philosophical ideas, which are part of the process of Mayavad or impersonalism. And what does impersonalism mean? It means you become falsely detached. Meaning you don't see things related to Krishna. You just have the idea that I'm Brahman, so I should be completely detached from everything. But here in this verse that we're looking at, Krishna is telling Uddhava, and Lord Chaitanya is telling Sanatan Goswami, in fact, and Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada are telling us that we shouldn't be falsely detached. So in other words, he's expanding a little bit expanding on that Paribas Sutra. And then the na atisakta, not overly attached to material existence. Well, that's quite easy. Mother Radharadnath, tell us which part of the Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse that is related to. Not attached to material existence. How about Anyabhilashita Shunyam or Anyabhilashita and Karma? Yes, correct. So, actually what Krishna or Lord Chaitanya is saying in this verse is that if you get association with devotees and you're not on the impersonal side, overly detached or falsely detached, and you're not too much on the materialistic side, then your dormant love of Krishna can be awakened quite nicely through engaging in the process of devotional service. So this is a nice point, and actually we're going to discuss it more as we go through the chapter. Is everyone clear how that is all working? Or anyone not clear on what we're getting at there? Okay, so let's say you are clear. Then, just to make it a little more clear, or at least specifically the idea of this good fortune, somehow or other, a person becomes initially attracted and then engages in devotional service. In the very next verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as you know, a couple of verses before this, in fact, this is Majjalila 22.50. So in Majjalila 22.46, Lord Chaitanya, again, he's introducing this idea of good fortune, and in the purport to Majja 22.46, Srila Prabhupada explains about the meaning of this good fortune. This is probably something that you have heard before. So, good fortune. Fortune means that you do something and you get a good result. So that's good fortune, when you get the good result. So here we're talking about some good fortune that you get the association of devotees. So how does that good fortune arise? Because you do something beforehand, which is of such a nature that it generates this good fortune in the form of meeting devotees. So, Prabhupada discusses three types of pious activities which generate good fortune. And I don't think we're going to ask you, we probably won't ask you for this in one of the tests, but it would be a good idea to try and learn this. So, bhogon mukhi sukriti. Sukriti means a good activity, and bhogon mukhi means of the nature of bhoga. You'll know what bhoga means. Yes. Sense gratification. Then you get mokshon mukhi. Say mokshon mukhi. And this means let's see. highest activity related to liberation. And then bhakti unmukhi sukriti. Again, highest activity related to bhakti. So I think you've heard these concepts before. Bhavamukhi Sukriti basically means that either knowingly or unknowingly, it doesn't have to be unknowingly, although it may be, knowingly or unknowingly, someone does some material pious activity. They help the poor people, feed the hungry people, something like that. And that will generate some good fortune, good karma. In the future, something will come their way, something nice. In the same term, some material thing will come their way, something which they can enjoy. Moksha Mukhi Sukriti means some pious activity performed knowingly or unknowingly, but it's related to liberation, like being very austere. In fact, there's a very interesting description in the Krishna books regarding Nara Kubera and Manigriva. Narada Muni is considering what to do about these two young boys. You familiar with Nara Kubera and Manigriva, I suppose? They were sons of Kubera, and Narada Muni caught them just enjoying themselves with some young ladies. And they were in a very degraded condition, so he wanted to help them to become corrected. So he decided to curse them to live in poverty as trees. Not just live as trees, but to live in poverty specifically. So Narada Muni, within his mind, he was thinking, what would be good? And he's evaluating the different benefits for these boys of being poor. So he was saying that if these boys are kept poor, then they will be, even though it's unwilling, they'll actually be living a very austere life. So they will involuntarily be reaping the results which people who voluntarily accept austerities reap. If you live austerely, then there's some type of benefit. It's you get some type of reaction which elevates you in the general direction of liberation. So he's saying that if people are forced to live poorly, then even though they're not interested in liberation, but they're actually making advancement towards liberation. Just as much as people who are thinking that they want to be liberated, they want to get out of Maya, therefore they accept austerities. So Moksha Mukhi Sukriti means that a person, one way or the other, either deliberately or not deliberately, knowingly or unknowingly, they perform activities which are conducive to liberation, like living austerely and living in a very simple way, like that. Then bhakti on mukhi sukriti means that a person who's not a devotee, but knowingly or unknowingly, it doesn't really matter, either knowingly or unknowingly, they do something which is related to Krishna consciousness. They give a donation, they eat prasad, they take a book, whatever it may be. They're not actually thinking that, oh yes, I want to be more Krishna conscious. They're just doing it for whatever reason. But they do this pious activity, so they get a result. And what is the result? The result is of the same nature. It's of the nature of bhakti. So when people meet devotees, get the association of devotees, and give donations, and hear about Krishna, and take prasad, then this produces the good fortune. These are pious activities, which produce the good fortune, the result, that you become a devotee. You become, as is said here in the Bhagavatam, or in the Bhagavatam, that you find yourself becoming attracted to Krishna consciousness. So, the idea is something like this, that there is you or someone, and you are a non-devotee, or someone is a non-devotee. And there we see you, and we see you as a non-devotee. Then later, we see you, but now you're a devotee. But we don't see what happened in between. There's this barrier of time. We don't know what happened in between. So there was you minus Krishna consciousness, and now there's you plus Krishna consciousness. What would it tend to mean happened in the middle, even though you didn't see it? You would have to assume that the person met Krishna consciousness. I mean, pretty simple idea. And where do you meet? How do you meet Krishna consciousness? You meet it in the devotees, basically. So you would have to assume that somewhere here the person met a devotee and received Krishna consciousness from them. All right. So we'll just go on. We'll come back to this verse in a little while. Well, actually, I think we'll take a break now. Any questions so far? Questions, comments? Okay. So let us meet again at 15:15, and we'll carry on. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we've discussed these first two paragraphs now, that by exceptional good fortune or somehow or other, depending on how you translate the verse, a person becomes attracted to Krishna, and that means that somehow or other, or that exceptional good fortune, means that that person gets that attraction through association with devotees. And that association is a pious activity. So that association is a pious activity. And in that association there are other pious activities like giving donations and so on. So pious activity is performed in the association of devotees, which is of a particular nature and produces a result of a particular nature. And that nature is devotional. And so the result is that the person becomes attracted to Krishna. So I assume you've all heard this type of discussion before, probably quite a number of times. So then, here we have this person then. They've associated with devotees nicely, given some donation, or in some way had some nice association. And now they're reaping the results. Some attraction to Krishna is arising in their hearts. But then, there have to be two other qualifications. They have to be not falsely detached, not on the impersonal side. Plus, they have to be not too materially attached, not too materialistic. If they have either of those problems, they're too much on the impersonal side, or they're too mundane, then even if they get some attraction to Krishna, then they're not going to make this nice progress which is being discussed, as is stated in the translation in Nectar of Devotion, that the service will be quickly effective, as long as they're not falsely detached, they're not excessively attached. So if they are either excessively attached or overly detached, then their attempts in devotional service will also not succeed, at least for the time being. At least it won't be quickly effective, which is the idea if you're not falsely detached and not overly attached. So here is someone then who is now attracted to devotional service with these two qualifications, engaging nicely. So now there are three categories of such persons. And this is the discussion which goes on the last paragraph of 29 and then going over to page 30 about Uttama, Madhyama and Kanishta Adhikaris. Srila Prabhupada, generally we find Srila Prabhupada translating this term like, say, Uttama Adhikari to mean, he says that such and such is an Uttama Adhikari. Some, like Narada Muni, is an Uttama Adhikari, meaning a top class devotee. Now, the name of this chapter is eligibility, or like the qualifications which are needed in order to take up devotional service and to advance in it. So now, strictly speaking, the literal translation of this word adhikari is eligibility or qualification. So in a sense, strictly speaking, the concept here of an Uttama Adhikari, or then the Madhyam or Kanishta Adhikari, the context in which these concepts are being presented here, strictly speaking, is in terms of eligibility. That if someone has these qualifications of the Uttama Adhikari, as described here, of the Uttama devotee, then this is a qualification for pure devotional service, as distinct from necessarily just a description of a person who's already a devotee on a certain level. Now, I hope this isn't sounding too technical, and actually it's not such a big point, but the fact is that strictly speaking the chapter is discussing qualifications in terms of being eligibility for executing devotional service, or even for accepting it. In other words, there's some people who, when they come to Krishna consciousness, they will exhibit Uttama Adhikari, a certain eligibility which is very high, like Bilva Mangal Thakur. He became a devotee, or he was becoming a devotee, and he started showing symptoms of very high eligibility. So he more or less immediately became a first-class devotee. More or less immediately. So as we read at the beginning of the last chapter we read, that people come into devotional service in many cases, not necessarily, but in many, many cases, from having performed it in a previous life. And you start off from where you left off. So a person may start off in this life from a very high point, or a relatively high point. And then this term, Uttama Adhikari, would refer to the eligibility they show initially for accepting devotional service. However, generally, and even here, Prabhupada is really talking in terms of just like a general condition, that if a devotee has these symptoms, then he's a Kanishta Adhikari. If a devotee has these other symptoms, he's a Madhyama Adhikari. If the devotee has some other symptoms, he may be an Uttama Adhikari. Anyway, I just thought I'd make that point, because the whole context here is eligibility for accepting devotional service. And depending on how you've acted in your last life, where you got to, then you may exhibit a high eligibility very quickly. Just to give you an example, some of you may have heard me tell this story before, but when a devotee, unfortunately he's now an ex-devotee, but anyway, Rameshwar, I think you've heard of Rameshwar Swami. In his day he was a very, very prominent devotee. So Rameshwar, when he joined, he was Bhakta Rab. So Tulsidas was telling me, who used to be here, that he was the temple president in Los Angeles, and the Laguna Beach temple was under him. He was in charge of that also. So he was there on the weekend, then on about Thursday he rang back to find out how things were going in the temple during Bhagavatam class. And he asked, oh, by the way, who's giving Bhagavatam class? And the person on the phone said, Bhakta Rab. So Tulsidas had just been there a few days before and there was no Bhakta Rab. So he asked, well, who's Bhakta Rab?